Hi everyone, it's Victoria here, and welcome to the podcast. Before we begin, I wanted to let you know about the free courses the Victoria Stillwell Academy has available to enroll in right now for dog geeks like you. Just go to vsdogtrainingacademy.com and click the enroll button, and you'll see the free course options. That's vsdogtrainingacademy.com. See you there. If things look a bit different today, for those of you who are not just listening to the podcast, but you're watching it too, then there's a reason for that. We had a massive storm in Atlanta last night and it knocked out the internet. So the internet was working to begin with and now it's not. But that will not stop me from recording this amazing podcast because I've been so excited to talk to the wonderful Anna Webb for a long, long time. She is a pet behavior and nutrition expert. She is, I don't think you can live in the UK without seeing her on some kind of news show or morning show as a contributor on a television show. You have read something that she's written. And of course, you know, my favorite show is the wonderful radio show that she co-hosts with the fabulous Jo Good on the BBC radio, which is my favorite, and barking at the moon. So welcome, Anna Webb, to the podcast. I'm so glad that you're here and that you have taken some time out of your very busy schedule to chat with us.
Oh, well, thank you, Victoria, for inviting me on. It's an absolute pleasure, you know, because we've known each other for many years and, you know, and I so admire everything that you do. And so it's just great. So thank you. I just feel really awful that you've had this big storm.
Yeah, well, do you know, I mean, here in Georgia, we're used to storms, but yesterday was particularly, it was an odd one because it wasn't so much that there was massive rain and massive thunder and lightning. Which normally happens here. We were on the edge of a storm, which meant we got the wind.
Right.
And so if you look outside right now, it looks like truly a storm has hit, and a big storm. So lots of trees everywhere, lots of power outages, but we didn't get one here until we did, which was 5 minutes after we started chatting. So anyway, but thank goodness that that I can do this and for our phones, because I've got a lot of questions that I want to ask you.
I know
what it feels like to be really busy, but how do you balance everything? Because I follow you on Instagram and on other media, of course, and you do so much. And you do so much just as in terms of educating people about dogs, but you also do a lot regarding animal welfare. How do you do it all?
Well, it does sometimes feel that you're juggling loads of plates, but, you know, it's nice to have variety. And ultimately, everything has a common theme, which is advocating for dogs and their betterment and, you know, great lives with dogs. But it can get a bit hectic, but, you know, we like to be busy. But I suppose my antidote to it all is going out. I live very close to this wonderful open space in East London called the Hackney Marshes, which I absolutely love, and it's very close. So I can go out and with my own dogs. Ah, we have sound effects, Victoria. Apologies in advance for this. But it is a dog podcast, so that's okay, I hope. So going out with the dogs and actually spending time with my own dogs is the greatest thing of all. I do enjoy it, as you know. I do like to, you know, train my dogs to enjoy, you know, park time, doing everything from a few doggy dancing moves out there to keep their focus, have fun, meet people, meet friends, you know, go up the road. It's very dog friendly in London, which I'm sure it is in Atlanta. So there's no shortage of places to meet up and enjoy.
I actually think that dogs in London enjoy more freedom than they do here, even though in Atlanta's a beautiful place. We've got lots of green space. However, the lead laws are pretty strict here in that you can't have your dog off the lead unless it's in somewhere like a dog run. So unlike London, where most parks and gardens kind of you can have your dog off lead, as long as they're under control or as long as they're going to come back and when called and they're safe, it's different here. And so I see quite a lot of leisurely activity here because dogs are confined.
Gosh, that is different. I know that in London we are very lucky to have our royal parks, you know, because obviously the royal family are very dog friendly, and you know, I'd hate for that to change. We're blessed, and I think London is the only city in the world to have so much green space punctuating all of Albania. You know, Paris, for example, doesn't have it. You've got the Bois de Boulogne way out west, a bit like our Richmond Park, but we've got Richmond Park and Hyde Park, Victoria Park, the Hackney Marshes, Hampstead Heath. You know, actually, we are spoiled. But, you know, it's a worry. Public space protection orders, Victoria, have been announced. They have.
See, this is why I rely on you for like up-to-date information on everything. Can you explain that to me? And I'm so glad Prudence has joined us because she does want to be part of this.
Yes, this is Prudence. She does. Let's hope she behaves. Prudence, yes, we're live on a very important podcast. Yes. Public space protection orders have been brought in due to, unfortunately, you know, post-pandemic, a lot of complaints from the public on dog walkers having too many dogs, people feeling intimidated by, you know, up sometimes more than six, which is the kind of, in inverted commas, legal top amount of dogs to be walked by one person at any given time. You know, not having total control of all of these dogs and other dogs running into those packs of dogs without a recall. We know now post-pandemic, due to some really interesting research from the Royal Vet College that was released the middle of January. I'm sure you heard about it. They studied 1,000 puppies from 16 weeks at the start of the pandemic to just before Christmas last year, 2023, and discovered that those owners are still having problems with their puppies with basic cues, you know, recall, stopping their dogs jumping up on people. And, you know, this can be annoying if you're not a dog lover and your dog is technically unable to come back to you, running, barking at people that maybe don't like it. It does cause a bad look. So the public space protection orders are introducing areas where only humans can go and areas where only dogs can go. It's beginning, I fear, in a way to come into the UK. Also, the number of dogs that professional dog walkers can walk at any given time reduced to a maximum of four, which I don't mind. You know, I'd rather see it less, to be honest. Yes, so some changes are afoot, unfortunately, in the UK, down, unfortunately, to dogs being a bit out of control in a public space.
Yeah, you know, that makes me very sad. I started off as a dog walker, gosh, in the early 90s, and that ages me, but I did. And at that time, there was no regulation. And so I sometimes had 10 at a time. So I would walk 20 dogs a day. I would have 10 in the morning and 10 in the afternoon. And they were all off lead. And we walked on Wimbledon Common in areas where there weren't other people. So we were okay, right? But I do remember there was this one guy dog walk. He had 25 at a time. Wow. Some on the lead and some off the lead. I mean, it was a sight to behold. So after an incident where one of his dogs actually killed the dog of a very famous actor, but still it happened near the windmill. Then the regulation, and I think that came in, I think it was six dogs. You couldn't walk more than six dogs. By then I'd moved on, but it was definitely kind of scary to see. As I said, we walked in a place where we didn't see anyone, but he walked in a place where he did, and it was full of people. And so even when you were there and you would see this whole of 25 dogs of all shapes and sizes coming towards you, for people were genuinely worried about that. And then there was a reason for it, as his dog killed another dog. So I'm with you. I do think there has to be some kind of regulation. And also I think it's better for the dogs, because walking 25 dogs all at the same time is not great. Even walking 10 dogs at the same time is not great unless they are off the lead, and then they're having a great time and I'm clueless. It's my first job, right? Don't really know what I'm doing, but it all works out, thankfully. But really 8 dogs all together or 10 dogs all together on the lead or even 6, isn't that better for the dog to have less?
I think so. I think to give them the more individual attention, you know, for a start. And I think as well, you know, for more owners to realize that it's great to walk your dog and to try and factor more time to do that if you possibly can. I just think the world of dogs has shifted since the pandemic, really. I think dogs almost have had the worst rap. I know there have been many tragedies, loss of lives through the time, but in a way, you know, this massive popularity and surge in dog ownership without people really perhaps thinking it through, understanding the lifelong commitment that is ahead of them. Because it's honestly, as people have gone back to work, Victoria, I'm sure it's the same in the States. Our rescues are now like there is no room. There really is no room. You know, they're not pretending. They are so full. And yeah, it's just a terrible shame, you know.
It's a terrible shame that, yes, you're right, because the rescues here are the same thing. We're absolutely chock-a-block. But isn't it just dreadful that people, of course, the pandemic was, it was such a weird thing for all of us to go through. But people used dogs in a way to get them through it. And then when they're getting busy and going back to work and doing their things, then the dogs become disposable property. And, you know, there are some people that were like, oh, I really, really tried and this just, it didn't work out. We get those. I'm not judging people, but I am saying to, these aren't toys that you just go to the shop and buy. These are living, breathing beings. As you said, it's a 15 year plus commitment. And yet now they're just being discarded left, right and center because, well, our lives have changed back to what they usually were. So then we're just going to get rid of this thing that impedes what we want to do. It's tragic.
It is tragic. It's really tragic, you know, and I don't think that happened before. I mean, I remember when I brought Molly, my first miniature bull terrier, who I know you knew, remember Molly, into my life as a grown up, my first dog on my own. You know, I think I was 37. Also ages me now quite a bit. Gosh, I mean, I was panicking as to whether I was fit for purpose to the commitment that I knew because of my, you know, growing up with my father as head of the RSPCA in Shropshire and, you know, and understanding the massive commitment that, you know, bringing a dog into your life would entail. And then it was an era before dog friendly had hit. So puppuccinos hadn't been invented at that point in time. you know, it was a huge commitment, but oh boy, it was amazing. I mean, you know, it was brilliant. It was actually bringing Molly into my life was a reaction to my father passing. And I knew that's what he would have wanted me to do. He always said, Anna, I think a dog would be a great companion for you. So I was freelance, but I said, it's impossible, Dad. You know, how can I look after a dog, you know, when, you know, I'm on my own and nowhere's dog friendly. Offices won't let dogs in. I mean, the whole spectrum, the whole horizon has changed so much to actually make dog ownership more accessible for people. That's the irony of this massive abandonment. I think partly, you know, it is because people just perhaps couldn't be bothered, maybe, you know, and I think the cost of living crisis also, it's not helping. I mean, we are finding things quite tight here, you know, and dogs are expensive.
You have to feed your children. You have to be able to feed yourself, right? For have to go and earn money and put food on the table. I completely understand that.
Exactly. So yes, it is. I just think it's a sad vista, but you know, we don't want this to be too much of a depressing podcast.
No.
Out of that, you know, a lot of joy is still reaped from dogs, isn't it, Prudence?
So I want to hear a bit more about your story because I find it fascinating, but what made you get a bull terrier?
Right. Well, I was living on Lamb's Conduit Street, which is amazing, with my boyfriend at the time, Mike, which, you know, it's where Great Ormond Street Hospital is. Mm-hmm. It's really part of old London. I was very blessed. It was great. And I just thought, my gosh, there's dogs everywhere living on this pedestrian street in apartments. There were Frenchies, and this would have been, well, yes, would have been about year 2001. And then Molly arrived in my life in 2002. And I realized I see why, because there's all these like lovely little parks, like Lincoln's Inn Fields very close by.
Oh, beautiful.
Coram Fields, there are lots of places to go walking and so on with dogs, in fact. So I got chatting to everybody and everyone was, you know, so great. And then our neighbour had a bull terrier. And I remember meeting Bill for the first time and I was like, that was the dog. His owner was called Toby. And he said, oh, he's a miniature bull terrier, Anna. And I went, miniature? Good Lord, I didn't know bull terriers came in miniature, because being a bit of, you know, a breed, you know, fanatics as a child, my main projects were, whether it was art or English or whatever at school, it would all be dog centric. Absolutely everything I did was dog centric. And I was just absolutely fascinated by all the breeds. So I became a bit of a mastermind at dog breeds when I was about nine. So I was like, really? And I had to consult my Observer's Book of Dogs circa 1974. Sure enough, there was a miniature bull terrier. Anyway, long story short, I used to babysit Bill quite a bit, and he was just such great company, because the thing is, well, you know, from having worked a lot with bull breeds, there is something about them. I really mustn't say there's something a little bit human about them, because that goes against everything I say.
I know,
but
what you
please
mean.
Please remember that dogs are not little people in a furry suit. That's one of my big sort of, you know, sound bites at the moment, because I think that's where so much goes wrong, Victoria. I don't know if you think the same. So that's where, yeah, my absolute interest in bull terriers began. And then shortly after that, Molly arrived as an 8-week-old puppy. And we did a huge amount together, Molly and I, must say. I mean, losing Molly, I'll be honest, I did derail. The grief that I, you know, and lots of people, they were very patient with me, I think, looking back. I found it quite a difficult phase, to say the least, the devastating loss of Moles. I mean, she was a very special dog. I do know that. And I think you do. I know you've been through this, Victoria. But other dogs only go to sort of mend your heart until, I believe, you do die with the heart of a dog.
Wow. I 100%. I think when people say, oh, it was just a dog, they haven't lived with a dog. They haven't experienced it. They haven't. And I remember meeting Molly. She was just an amazing dog. But then I always think, when our dogs pass away, then they go, well, can you please give a home to another one? Can you please spread your love to another one? Because I had such a great time and I had such great love with you. So can you give that to another one? And that's how I kind of get on. And yeah, I've lost two heart dogs, but I've got my beautiful Jasmine, who's my Chihuahua, who's here. But, you know, yeah. And I think what really kind of impressed me when I met Molly was the fact that, you know, bull terriers, as well as many other bull breeds, they get a bad rap. But I think she showed just that they're just fun and lovely and smart, yeah, and curious.
Very smart, very curious, and they are trainable. But, you know, I was a famous dog trainer once upon a time who actually, won't name any names, who actually said, she's passed away now, she actually said, Barbara Woodhouse.
Yes,
said,
it's old Barbara.
Oh, Barbara, the only dog that is absolutely untrainable, impossible, is the bull terrier. So I thought, you know what, I want to make a point of proving her wrong, you know.
Good.
And, you know, yeah, absolutely. So I do remember Barbara and her television program, you know, way back. So, of course, you can train any breed, although some breeds, I'd say, are easier, aren't they? Aren't they, you know, really?
Yeah, they are. It's not so much sort of smart and not smart. It's processing. I find that dogs that process things really quickly tend to be the ones that we call smart, and dogs that process things a little bit slower are the ones that we that we say, well, maybe they're not that intelligent, but all dogs are. They all have an intelligence that enables them to move through the world and exist and adapt and evolve with us and live with us, which takes a certain type of intelligence. Truly, it does. But, you know, I find that the bulldogs, they process really fast. And that is why sometimes I think people say they're untrainable, because they're always like a step ahead. There's a lot to do. The bulldog's like, can you just like get on with it? Because there's so much to explore and there's so much to do.
Exactly. And they want to do it their way. And, you know, and it's about turning their world into a game, really. And they are such fun loving dogs, you know, they really, really are. And of course, so we maintain all of this, you know, Victoria. I can be seen out there doing a few doggy dancing moves on occasion with Prudence.
I love it.
You know, you've got to, you know, it's great fun. So, and hide and really tapping up, and Prudence, particularly, my word, her olfaction. I have trained her to sniff out the British truffle. But we did we did it just before lockdown. So obviously everything got blown apart because we couldn't go anywhere to find the truffles. But I was detailed, but I was cleaning out my freezer the other day and lo and behold, I found some bits of truffle frozen, and I was thrilled because I thought I'd use them all up, but they were hidden away. So I'm going to be revisiting the truffle, as I've got my scent tins, and I learned a lot from the police officer who helped me. You know, scent work is something I'm just so, so keen on, you know, and all dogs need their scent, their olfaction activated for great fun. You know, they love it, don't they?
Yeah, they're doing what a dog's supposed to do. And but actually the British truffle, because, you know, we've heard about truffles. We have a lot of truffle hunting dogs in Seattle in the Northwest, the Pacific Northwest, because it's a very wet region. And so a very wooded region. So there's a lot of truffles there. And then we also have lots of truffle hunting dogs and pigs in Italy. But I really haven't heard a lot about truffle hunting dogs in the UK.
Yes, well, they exist because we do have the British truffle. That is, there's a winter version and there's a spring version. And like other truffles, I believe, they like the oak trees, and that's their main tree they like to, you know. But there is... you do have to get permission from a landowner to go on the land. And then, because truffles, unlike mushrooms, I mean, they are basically a fungi, you know, mushrooms you can pick if you're doing your foraging, and that's fine, it's legal. But truffles, because you have to dig to get them up, well, that's if Prudence hasn't like totally dug them up. you know, so you are... you know, you're affecting the land. So it's a different legal thing. I know in Epping Forest, because they love beech trees as well. And in Epping Forest, there is a beech tree, sort of lovely, spectacular, natural run of beech trees. And there's truffles there. But they do sporadically stop people with rucksacks to see if they've, been foraging.
Really?
And without permission. Yes, yes. So, I mean, I'm sure you won't end up in jail or anything for it, but, you know, it's best to be prepared. So basically, it's a shame our truffling got thwarted by the pandemic a bit. So I need to get back on it. But there you go. But
you gave her this chance to do that, though. You gave her this, you taught her how to do it, and you used it for something that's really fascinating, interesting. So you're getting something out of it. She's getting something out of it.
And
I think you're showing Barbara... really, if Barbara Woodhouse was alive today, she'd like, okay, Anna, I got you. All right.
Yeah, fair
dues.
Right,
I'm wrong. Fair dues. So, look, how do you go from, of course, you said that your father was the director of the RSPCA.
Well, he was the secretary.
Of the RSPCA in Shropshire. And how do you go from a child learning a lot from him to doing what you do as a pet behavior and nutrition expert, as well as a broadcaster on the BBC? How do you do that?
How do I do that? Well, I mean, it happened over many years, obviously. I studied psychology at Oxford Poly, human psychology, which was really interesting. And within that, you know, studied Skinner and obviously Pavlov's, obviously classical conditioning, operant conditioning. And that I found extremely interesting. I found the mathematical side of psychology absolutely daunting, you know, statistics and the like was very difficult for me to do. I had to pass that. But that just was an interesting look on you know, psychology, projection, the role of animals and their impact on humans psychologically. That's something I found extremely interesting and studied that a lot before all of the research that we've now seen over the last 20 years, I think, really, Victoria, so many studies on dogs and the impact they have on our lives, the impact we have on their lives as well, you know, for better or for worse. And that's fantastic because we've probably, you know, because we've had the technology, you know, the MRI scans, for example, in Atlanta, you know, to prove emotional intelligence, which, you know, staggers me still to think it's not that long ago that this research was done, you know, and prior to that, many dog trainers actually didn't believe dogs had emotional intelligence. You know, which is extraordinary to even think now, isn't it? You know, so there was that journey, and then my journey, you know, took me into the media quite a bit at first, using my psychology and love for writing and so on into the media. But then it was more when Molly arrived, it was a baptism of fire. We hadn't had bull terriers at home. We had Springer Spaniels. I'd grown up with lots of other breeds, but not particularly bull breeds. And so when Molly's at the beginning as a puppy was quite difficult. You know, she wouldn't walk, which of course is a very common bull terrier trait, actually. Mm-hmm. It was drop anchor. No, you know, I'm not going. And I was so worried she wasn't going to get any exercise. So the whole thing. And little by little, I navigated the world of dog trainers in London at that time and found this amazing woman who I'm still in touch with, Sue Evans, who took me under her wing, and I'd go up to training with her in Finsbury Park, another great park that we have in London. And I'd help out on every Sunday and obviously work with Molly. And Molly, the problem was with Molly as well, she was just totally spoiled, you know. and you know, she wouldn't respond. It was like, why won't she walk? Everyone would say, why won't she walk? I even tried because she was partial to bananas. So, a friend of mine suggested planting bananas. We didn't have far to walk to the office. She came with me to the office. It wasn't exactly a long walk. It would take us 2 hours. It should have taken us about 15 minutes. So really stubborn, but we had to work through it, trying not to reward this dropping anchor behavior. What was it about, you know, moles? It ended up years later, me discovering that her feet were slightly too small for the size of her body. And I think, and we had trouble with her feet, cost a huge amount in vets until I discovered what fixed it. So I promised Molly she would die with young feet. And I achieved that, Victoria, with red light therapy, actually, which you know now is all over the beauty market for helping skin.
Oh, so yes. It helped with,
yes. And it worked on Molly's feet. So that was amazing.
That is amazing because though here's this dog that drops anchor that, you know, people label as stubborn and that it kind of looks like a stubborn behavior, but actually she's uncomfortable. She's because we know that bull terriers as well, as many others, like even the French bulldog, that they're quite sort of head heavy, that there's a lot of weight that's on their front paws, especially because there's that big head and that big body and less on the back paws. So this was a medical issue. I mean, maybe yes. A mixture of both, because she was just like, I don't feel comfortable.
Exactly. I think it was a mixture of both, which we overcame over the years. We worked around it. You know, we would get taxis quite a lot from A to B, but Moles was welcome in meetings. So I think we were quite trailblazers in a way. I'd say, look, please, can I bring my dog to the meetings? And of course, people would have to say yes. So Moles
they'd have to say.
So basically, Moles went where other dogs had never been before, and it was great. And she loved traveling in the car. And we did lots of dog shows and events and really got into the spirit of it all, really. And then more and more I got into training. That's the thing. More and more and more, and learnt and learnt and learnt and learnt from lots of great people in the sector at the time. You know, Roger Mugford, I'd go down there to his farm regularly and do agility and learn how to do agility, actually. And, you know, great stuff. So I think, you know, it's all about doing it yourself as well. And then, you know, you understand more how it helps other dogs as well.
And how do you get from there? So you're now delving into the world of training, but how do you get from there to the BBC?
Ah, so what happened was there was a documentary on a segment of the BBC called Inside Out. And I don't know how they got in touch, but anyway, the BBC got in touch saying, we're doing this segment on fur kids. So bit of a dangerous city, but this was about 2006. So we're going back a bit, and Joe Good had just got Matilda, her bulldog puppy. And so Matilda was only about 12 weeks. And Joe was desperate to do this. So I think this overwhelming feeling of complete love and maternal instinct had hit Joe when Joe didn't think she had the capacity for maternal instinct. She won't mind me saying that. So we did a documentary. I was the headline case study, in my flat in Islington, and Molly did some doggy dancing on it. She jumped through my arms on cue, and we were just gassing, and that we really hit it off. And I remember Joe said, Anna, I need your advice. What do I feed Matilda on? And I said, look, just do me a favor. I opened my freezer and I gave her a slab of raw green tripe. And I said, look, you know, put it in a bag. And I said, let this thaw out. Please give her this. And then let's chat some more. So that was the beginning of a friendship which has lasted, gosh, because that was before we were doing the radio. So over 16 years, 14 years ago, we began this dog slot on BBC Radio London late night slot. And it's just sort of grown and grown from there. So that's how it moved from, you know, not being on the radio to being on the radio, basically. And over time, that's grown, again, just from experience, having done some dreadful interviews. Not keeping my eye on the clock is one of my biggest failings. And I talked right across the news once on BBC Scotland. They still had me back, which I still can't believe.
It's learning
on the job, I think, is, you know, and then and having a great interest in dogs, I think, you know, really interested in dogs and the purpose of different dogs and different dog breeds. You know, that I think has also, you know, driven me along. And the great, because as a child, I would read all the books, you know, from Lassie Come Home, watch all of the films. I'd be absolutely obsessed.
Mm. Now, we're going to take a short break, but after the break, I want to come back and I'd like to talk about nutrition, which is a little bit of a hot topic, but I would like to talk about it.
Okay, great.
We're going to be back.
A quick break here to get a word from this episode's sponsor, the Victoria Stillwell Academy. Now, did you know that I have a school that teaches people to be dog trainers? I love It's Me or the Dog and my work as a dog trainer on television, but those of you who know me know that my true passion really lies with helping other people live their best lives with dogs. And I love seeing that truly magical transformation when that light bulb goes off with someone I'm helping with their dog. That's what it's all about. It's the secret sauce that pet professionals like me, who work with these amazing animals, that's what we all share. It's what makes being a dog trainer the most rewarding, enriching job I can imagine. It's why I love what I do. And it's also why I founded the Victoria Stillwell Academy, so that I could provide a roadmap to others who want to help dogs and the people who love them learn to do what they love doing at the highest level, that is, to become professional dog trainers. Earning a living working with dogs professionally, it's been a dream of mine for years. And that passion is what drives all of us at VSA to create courses that are specially designed to help adult human learners chase their dreams. Now, most people already know about our flagship dog trainer course, which provides both online only and in-person options. But did you know that we also offer both dog guardians and future professionals a fully refundable 10-hour online course taught by me and other awesome VSA faculty, and it's called the Fundamentals of Dog Training and Behavior course. Now, I know it's not the sexiest name, but it's one of the most dynamic learning experiences available to dog geeks, and it's a pretty awesome first step to see if learning with VSA is right for you. Now, as a Positively Podcast listener, you can use promo code PODCAST right now to get the Fundamentals course for 50% off. That is $150 value. So, take our course. Plus, we also have a couple of free starter courses. They're free, completely free, including a course called Building Your Dog's Confidence, which reveals the secret ingredient to a happy dog life. So, I encourage you to check out VSA today. As I said, we have courses for all levels of learners. So it doesn't matter whether you're a newbie with your first puppy or a grizzled vet already making a living as a pet professional. Visit positively.com/VSA to learn more and enroll in a free course. That is positively.com/VSA. We all want the best for our dogs. Whether that means you taking home some key tips for your own dogs or adding the ultimate in professional dog trainer education, visit positively.com/VSA today. VSA, it is the future of dog training. And now, back to the podcast.
I'm back with Anna Webb, and I'm so enjoying this conversation because I know you, but I'm finding out a lot more about your journey, and I love that. Now, you are a nutrition expert, and you do a lot of consultations with people about nutrition. Nutrition is a hot topic. It can definitely get an emotional response. I tend to stay away from it because I don't know as much as you do about the subject. But how did you get into nutrition, and how do we know that we're feeding our dogs the right kind of food?
Great questions. Well, I got into nutrition, it would have been in 2000. Well, I've always been interested in nutrition from a human point of view. Molly's breeder was really interesting, as her advice for me as to what to feed her on was to source some raw green tripe. Hence my mention there just earlier about giving Joe some raw green tripe for her puppy, Matilda. So I went on a quest for that, and that was extremely difficult back in 2002. But I did find some, and Moles then progressed more and more into a fresh whole food diet based on a lot on what we fed our dogs at home. Because remember, this was, you know, quite a long time ago. My father was quite an old dad. He was actually born in 1920. So the vista of living with dogs back then, you know, it was very much pre a lot of the prescription diets. Obviously, they were nowhere near being made at that time in history. So dogs ate quite simply, really. They ate meat, you know, being carnivores, you know, Victoria. So the sort of biscuit driven type of food, that it was there, but not in the form that we know it now. So people would feed their dogs on scraps and, you know, back then. So that was very much what we did, you know, as I grew up with dogs. I remember the awful smell of lamb's hearts being boiled. That was like, oh, no, in the kitchen, you know. But that's what our dogs would eat. You know, we did add a bit of biscuit. I think the brand back then was called, don't think it exists anymore, Winalot. I think that went away a lot.
There's Bonio too, yeah.
Right, Bonios were around, absolutely. There was that funny advert with, I think it was Clement Freud and his blood hound that advertised the Bonio biscuit. I do remember. Anyway, So, yeah, so I had a bit of an understanding from my childhood, and coupled with Molly's breeder being very adamant that, you know, bull terriers needed to definitely eat meat and a bit of vegetables. She was in a way quite advanced. So that's the route I took, receiving a lot of negative feedback along the way, I will say, from, you know, my local vet, for example. Although, you know, I stood my ground, having studied O-level biology at this point. You know, I clearly learnt in that dogs are carnivores, which clearly does mean that they do need to eat a lot of meat. But then I took this further with study in 2012. I enrolled with the College of Integrated Veterinary Therapies, the first real sort of naturopathic course that was available to people like me wanting to delve deeper into the natural realm of solutions for keeping your dogs living longer, longevity being the key, you know, always. So that was fabulous. It was an intense, really intense, just over 2-year course. And nutrition was one of the big modules, so that I could, you know, put qualifications to what I'd found very interesting and done a lot of reading around prior to. So that's how it all began. Yes.
So, but at that time, though, that kind of focus on nutrition, but also that, you know, the whole naturopathy, naturopath or naturopathic medicine.
Yeah.
Naturopathic healthcare, I should really say.
Yeah.
That was kind of a bit like, ooh. at that time, but which now it's not, because we know better. But at that time, didn't you like have people saying you're a bit crazy?
No, yes and no. I mean, lots of people have been feeding their dogs on raw, you know, food at that time. So not really. So once you've got the science behind you, then of which there is loads, then you can actually say, well, actually, look at your dog's teeth. You know, they're not like rabbit's teeth. They are designed to chew and to benefit from that. And we know, but I totally agree. Now, because there's so much science that's been done on humans and the detrimental effect of eating a very heavily, overly processed diet over time, you know, does cause obesity. You know, we've got a rise in diabetes in the human population. We also have diabetes now in dogs, which, you know, dogs prior to quite recently never got diabetes. It wasn't something that a dog should really suffer from, or even pancreatitis. All of these modern diseases and a lot of arthritis arguably can be caused by, you know, you are what you eat. You know, that's my mantra in life. And I've adhered to that as much as I can myself. And I think more and more now it is easier to explain to pet parents. I did a consult just this afternoon today, and really wonderful woman, very healthy, talks, you know, on the BBC actually about nutrition and health related issues for people. And she was like, I just can't believe I haven't taken the step for, you know, her Vizsla. And I said, well, look, don't worry, I'm now on the right path. And there's other things like, for example, red light therapy to help counter arthritis or stiffness or help with bruising or wound healing. Again, there is now the science on that. And of course, over time, when, you know, I ended up working a lot with Molly's vet was Richard Allport, who is one of the famous holistic vets in the UK. And with working with Richard on Molly, you know, I was doing my course at the time. So I learnt extra more, and I delved into areas such as homeopathy for Molly, because in the end, she got ill and I wanted to fix her. And you know, the stark reality of it was, Victoria, I felt that the conventional profession was limited in its tools to help me fix Molly. And I was able to, with the broad range of tools available, more on the natural side, to give her 5 more years. So.
Wow. 5 more years with, got that's stunning.
Yeah, it was really, it took me again on a massive journey, loads of reading, you know, feeding dogs on cancer, you know, my bookshelf, you know, that actually it's not in view because it looks so messy. You know, there's some amazing out of America, you know, I was able to reach out some amazing vets like Dr. Jean Dodds, who for me is a legend. She helped
She's
me so
legend.
Much.
She's a legend.
Mm-hmm. Real legend. And in the end, Jean would come on the radio and we'd discuss, you know, the topic of immunization over vaccination, for example, a hot topic. You know, and these topics are considered quite hot, but it is important that they're discussed, I think.
Yeah. Now, Jean Dodds, I know she's done a lot on thyroid disease in dogs, especially, hasn't she?
Absolutely. And in fact, Prudence, who's sat on my knee at the moment, had her bloods, when was it, 2 years ago, sent to Dr. Jean, to Hemopet in California to be analysed, as a, you know, her testing system on the thyroid is considered, you know, the gold standard, if you like, globally. So, you see, this is where I'm, you know, people think, oh, Anna, really? Surely the results at the RVC would have been sufficient. No, they don't. It wasn't, you know, I'm like that. They've got to go to Jean Dodds. And that, but in order to do that, you have to go to a holistic vet. Mm. So I think, you know, there's lots of scope for change and betterment, and integration is what I'd really love to see, you know, to help our animals, because, you know, one size doesn't always fit all. That's one of the main issues.
Yeah. With can you tell me a little bit more about about doing the radio show and kind of some, what topics that you cover? And I mean, I've been to the studio, which is always very exciting. It's always very exciting to come to that studio at BBC. It's on Portland Square, isn't it? It's sort of... Or it was, at least. I don't know if, I mean, BBC's still there, but it used to, okay.
BBC is still there, hanging
still
on.
There. Yeah, hanging on, right, exactly. So to come there and come up into the studio and sit there with you and Joe, and it's just like, oh my gosh, I love it. In fact, I mean, I love it more than doing live television. But, you know, you've got such a lovely rapport and you cover so many different subjects. How do you pick your subjects? What are the things that you like to talk about?
Well, a lot depends on what's going on in the news. You know, we like to follow breaking news, for example. Topics, you know, it is wellness. It is, you know, also heartwarming human interest stories. You know, there's been a lot lately. There was a little puppy you might have heard, because I think it went global. She was born around Bristol. She was found in a car park and she actually had five legs. So one of her legs had to be removed, and it was a genetic sort of malfunction, really, that so she didn't have four legs. She actually had five, and it meant her pelvis was a bit deformed as well and needed lots of surgery to get her right. But she has been fixed, and, you know, and that's an interesting story. So there's everything from that sort of thing to talking about, of course, the dog behavior conference, because that's seminal for people to learn and, you know, empower themselves with their dogs to get the best life, you know, with your dog, rather than, you know, thinking, oh, I can't take my dog out because they're too reactive and people will look at me. And, you know, and there's all of these human, you know, thought processes that go on sometimes. But how do we choose our guests? Yeah. In terms of guests in the studio, you know, it's led by people breaking news, you know, new book launches. But we like to think, you know, that we're helping people. So helping our listeners learn, you know, show them resources to investigate for themselves and make their own choices. That's, I think, what it's all about. But also the great, you know, world of dogs. And there's always something to talk about, because it is remarkable. This has been going on every week for 14 years, Victoria. I know.
14 years. Do you know that? I used to work, I wrote for Dogs Today for 14 years. And my mother... I don't write anymore because, you know, I had to focus on other projects as well. And I, basically, but I, my mother used to say, don't you ever run out of things to write? And I was like, no, because dogs are so rich. There's so much to talk about them. They have such rich lives. And there's so many subjects to talk about. There's so much education and out there to give. So really, I feel like we're very lucky, aren't we?
Yes. Oh, what do you mean, to discover dogs and spend time with dogs? Oh, totally. And, you know, and I do love helping people. And there's nothing more great, really, than having a success, you know, with a dog and they're human, and making things better for them, whether it is through some training tweaks or, you know, changing their diet or whatever. It is really fulfilling, really. Yeah, because it's the greatest joy. And first-time dog owners that are so surprised by it all. I love that as well.
You're right. They are surprised. And I think when people get dogs, and then it's not just not realizing how much goes into it, because I think people learn pretty quickly, actually, how much goes into it. But it is surprising, the world that opens up to them. And it's one thing that you said that really kind of struck a chord, is that you're when you go out and you have so many green spaces that you can walk in, whether you are like here where we can go out walking, but we have to have our dogs on the lead, it doesn't matter whether on lead or off lead, you're still meeting a ton of people, that actually having a dog allows you to be part of this wonderful club, which is not always wonderful, but most of the time it's wonderful. You're part of this club, and there's kind of an understanding, and it doesn't matter who you are, because a dog will ground you, won't they?
Exactly. And dogs give us routine, and they give you responsibility, and I feel they give you a purpose, which I think is really, really important as well. That's different from a human's company, you know, obviously, because they're a dog. I agree. And it's interesting, you know, I mean, all the health benefits, you know, that have been studied, dogs to human. But the one I find interesting is that dog owners tend to not get dementia as much as those that don't have a dog.
I haven't heard about that one. I mean, I've heard about like the benefits if you've had surgery and or is it people that have had heart attacks, that if you have a dog, you're more likely to, you know, your survival rate is much better.
Yes.
After that heart attack. But I haven't heard the dementia one.
Yes, apparently. Yep. I heard this on Radio 4 just the other day. And so there is evidence that they studied dog, you know, dog owners and non-dog owners, and the rate of dementia between the two. And there was hardly any of the dog owners that actually got dementia compared to those that don't own a dog, that sort of a study. But it makes sense, because you go out with your dog, you are smiling at other people, even if you're just going morning, you know, that's a big deal if you're, you know, living on your own, for example. But it also allows you an escape, you know, maybe an escape from the children for a while. Just go and be with your dog. And more and more, certainly in London, I don't know what it's like in Atlanta, but we have so many dog events. They use the parks. I was at one last Saturday down at the Italian Garden end of Hyde Park, which is really lovely, lovely, really lovely. And it was so lovely to see so many people out with their dogs. You know, it was an Easter egg hunt, except the dogs had to find the balls, and then the balls were color coded to different prizes. So it was cleverly organized.
Yeah, you know, and I love that. So dogs are very good for our health. And now these studies on dementia, fascinating. Mm. I also know that as empty nester, my daughter started college 2 years ago. I can't believe it. She's now 20 in her second year. But my dog was, I had two at the time, and Bella passed away a couple of months ago. But that my dogs were my solace after that. But it's very odd when you've brought up a child for 18 years and then all of a sudden they're gone. And I mean, they come back for vacations and stuff, but that's it. Yeah. And it's almost like, that's it. But I had my purpose still were my dogs, and my dogs, I still had to look after them and to walk them and to care for them. They're my babies. They're my children. And it's sometimes, to some people's chagrin, I should say that I do call my dog my babies, because they are. And they helped me through that time in life, which is so very odd and so very strange.
No.
But they just do.
Absolutely, they do. They support us. You know, they're always there. You know, I think, you know, that they offer unconditional love. Like, you know, I don't believe humans really do. You know, it's always, you know, you take with one hand and give with the other. But dogs are really there for you. And they understand us so much because, again, with the science on dogs smelling cortisol and this transferal of stress, which I'm really interested in, you know, they're quite new studies, that, you know, they're like sponges, dogs. I think, you know, they do absorb a lot of our emotions. And I think, you know, an awareness of that from the pet parent's point of view is important, I think. But that's sort of going off on a segue a little bit there.
This is why you got to come back on this podcast, because this is why I was so happy that you could come on here, because you're fascinating and I could talk to you forever. You just know you are like the one that I kind of go to for that latest doggy news. And I just thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your journey. If people want to learn more about the work you do, where do they find you?
Well, they can find me at Anna Webb Dogs on Instagram and on my website. But also, you know, do check out my podcast, because Victoria, your episode that we recorded together is in our top four most listened to episodes. Well, yes, and it's not surprising at all. Second only to Dr. Rupert Sheldrake. He's up there, you know, because he's into telepathy. Cool. And I love Dr. Rupert. And the Forever Dog book is also quite up there. And you're there. So so there we go. And should be, because you are amazing as well. And the work that you've done, because something I'll just add, and this is maybe food for thought to end on, the Royal Vet College revealed in their study in January that unfortunately people are beginning to use aversive methods again in their training, because they've built frustration. They didn't know how to do it, weren't able to get the right advice. Perhaps some new people have come into the dog scene, I don't know, and recommending, you know, slapping, shouting, you know, and so on, yanking. And this isn't good. So, that's one of the other, you know, negative sides of the pandemic fallout, I think.
You bring up a really good point. We definitely see it. We see it around here. We see it on a national level here in the United States. We also see it on an international level. And I do think social media is to blame. I think there's a very social media that people get drawn into. There's some fabulous people on social media doing great stuff. But there's also some not so fabulous people doing really brutal stuff to dogs that people get drawn into because they think that it's cool, or that, oh, look, it works and it saves dogs' lives. And I mean, you know, and I think it's really sad. So I'm not surprised at that. But, it, you know, when I hear it, it just spurs me on to do more. And that's why people like you, that has such a great reach out there to the general public, myself and then others there from every single trainer who's taken the time to study and to learn and who cares for the welfare of dogs and the people that love them, that we hope to tip the balance again.
Yeah, we must. We really must, because it's fun. You know, it's fun to do it positively. Yeah. I absolutely love it. You know, I mean, I'm always encouraging people to use the thumb up, you know, because having trained some deaf bull terriers, which isn't easy, you know, but all you can use, you see, is the thumb. So I love thumb. Don't you?
Yeah, the thumb. Yeah. It's okay. Oh, look at Prudence. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you, Victoria.
And you're amazing, and I'm so glad, guys, that you've joined me on this podcast. I hope that you enjoyed it. I told you she was going to be fabulous. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you guys again.
Thanks for tuning in to Victoria Stillwell's Positively Podcast. For Victoria's online dog training courses, more information, and helpful dog training tips, visit Victoria's official website at positively.com. Get connected on Facebook, Instagram, and other social media as Victoria Stillwell, and follow her on Twitter at Victoria S. Learn to become a professional dog trainer with the Victoria Stillwell Academy at vsdogtrainingacademy.com. And be sure to tune in next time as Victoria helps you and your dog live your best life together. Positively.